Good morning. Welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We appreciate all of you for tuning into the show. Today is Sunday, September 18th, 2016. I'm Scott Lohman. Today I'm interviewing Dale DeBoxy, author of The Cartoon History of Humanism. We welcome listener interaction during our live show with your phone calls to 952-946-6205 or your emails to radio@mnatheist.org. The Cartoon History of Humanism is not your father's guide to history. Dale DeBoxy has created a fun and informative look at humanists from antiquity to enlightenment. He's created an every person to explore the lives of the famous and obscure humanists of history and to explain their ideas and concepts. Dale DeBoxy is the author and illustrator of a biweekly column, Women in Science, at madartlab.com, the first 2 years of which have been collected in the book form as the illustrated Women in Science. He writes the Great Lives series for Free Inquiry, is a regular contributor to Philosophy Now, American Atheist Magazine, and Skeptical Inquirer. Since 2007, he and Jeffrey Schaefer have co-written the historical webcomic Frederick the Great, a most lamentable comedy breaching time and space. And he also has a collection of essays out called Godless Nerdistry. You can find links and program archives on the Minnesota Atheists website. Dale DeBoxy, welcome to Atheist Talk.
Why, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's quite appropriate. The program they run before us is Philosophy Talk, so it's kind of cool that we're getting people in this part of the world a lot of philosophy this morning.
Oh, man, yeah, nothing better on a Sunday morning than a good dose of Immanuel Kant. So, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, we got to have fun with that. So, yeah. What got you, we'll just start with basics. Have you always been a humanist, or had you moved into that from other places?
Yeah, no, I had the great fortune of, you know, my parents were not people who kind of pushed any particular dogmatic system upon me when I was young, so when you're left to your own devices to figure things out, it's that sort of theistic option just doesn't seem as immediately obvious or appealing. You know, I'd see other families that were, you know, praying over their meals, and I just thought it was sort of the same thing that I did when I, like, tried to use the Force, like, when I was a kid and, like, tried to, like, summon a pencil towards me, and I knew, like, that never worked, and this thing probably doesn't work either. So it was just that sort of same thing that happened. So, I have never had a time where it seemed a likely option that theism was a reasonable explanation for the universe.
Okay, so yeah, that's always fun because a number of us have come out of religion and so had to basically do that little fight with ourselves. And then before,
yeah, no, that was a very fortunate thing, and it took a while, you know, just because in our school it was not something that was really talked about all that much, and so it was something that I didn't think that people really believed in. It was exactly the same way that I sort of believed that Darth Vader was a person, but I kind of knew he wasn't. Like, I felt that had to be the way that these guys felt about Jesus and all these other characters. And it was a complete shock when kids started confidentially saying that was something that they actually believed in. And I didn't think that was something that people actually did for a while, and that adults actually did. And it was a very kind of odd moment for me to realize that was a thing. So it confounded me, and it's still a little bit, but yeah. I'm working my way towards understanding.
That certainly would do that. So how did you, have you always been interested in history as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of desperately interested in those corners of history that are kind of in danger of being forgotten. I just feel this titanic need to try and save them with whatever I've got. So history, I just love poking around in those strange, obscure little corners, and I pretty much have since as far back I can remember, just going to the library as a kid and just looking for the biographies and the books that had, you know, those little checkout cards that mm-hmm. they used to have back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Like, looking for the ones that were checked out the longest ago and checking them out again. It's like, I'm going to save you, book. Don't worry. I'm going to save you, and I'm going to read you, and I care about you even if nobody else does. So I've never been without that impulse.
Oh, I love that approach. Yeah, because I grew up in a small town where we had a Carnegie Library. with the cards in the back of the book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was things the kids don't know about these days. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the great fun on that part. So then, as you were exploring those parts, did you start to then discover the famous and obscure humanists of history?
It started. Yeah. I mean, when you first start out, because this was, you know, the mid-90s when I was doing this, and we didn't have the same, you know, sort of breadth of resources. So every time that I went to the library and found one of these guys, it was a revelation, and it was, you know, because there was websites or any of that other stuff to sort of collect us together. So I feel it was like each atheist was sort of, and each humanist was sort of digging their own little tunnel by themselves and finding their own way, lit by these books that you'd find every once in a while. You'd find, like, Atheism, the Case Against God somewhere, and you'd find Robert Ingersoll buried in a library somewhere. And then those, I remember going to the bibliographies of those books and just mining them for other things to look for and try and find. And Amazon wasn't really a thing yet, so you had to just, you know, go to Barnes & Noble or your local shop and try and find those guys. And then you'd get that book, and that bibliography would lead you to more things to try and more obscure things. So it was this great, you know, sort of adventure of finding the roots of humanism and all the little contributors to humanism before, like, the internet made all of that kind of searching, you know, totally irrelevant. But, you know, it was that excitement of, you know, here's this 17th century Dutch author who, you know, was responsible for encouraging Spinoza to do this, who was responsible for, you know, just filling in all of those little lines, was so exciting. I remember, and yeah, that was all just trolling libraries and going through used bookshops and just being a bibliography nerd for about a decade until the internet said, like, no, stupid, this is how you do it. And I'm like, oh, okay. But back in the day, that's how we did.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. It sounds like we're close in age, and that you know, nerd hunting was. Especially, it's neat that you're a nerd of philosophy when a number of us have other interests on that part, because that you don't find a whole lot of people that can do it and then also popularize it so that it's easier to understand. Because I was always scared by philosophy when I was in my teens.
Well, I mean, they try and make it scary, too, is the problem, is that, you know, it was, let's say, 70 years ago, you know, you had the philosophers were people who you went to and you asked them about things. You know, if society had a question, it would ring up Jean-Paul Sartre, or it would, you know, ring up Hannah Arendt, and it would ask them, like, what do you think about this? You're a philosopher. You're a professional thinker. Like, what is your opinion on this? And that slowly started ebbing away. And I think eventually, like, there was just this self, you know, protective mechanism that locked in philosophy, in that if we're not going to be consulted or if we're not going to be asked about things and we're just going to, you know, sort of wrap ourselves in these layers of jargon and get deeper and deeper into the non-engagement mode, and the philosophers stopped engaging on their side, we stopped asking them on our side, that made them even deeper in their non-engagement mode. So yeah, it's philosophy is a daunting thing to get into now that it didn't used to be. And I mean, certainly British philosophy has always done its own thing to, you know, hide behind a wall of its linguistic jargons. But I mean, it is a shame because there is so much, and that's what I try and bring out in the book. There's so much fun to be had there in terms of chewing on these thoughts and watching them develop. And it's a shame that we've made it such a scary thing.
Yeah, and I've seen that when I've tried to tackle some religious philosophers to try and, you know, dig into that. It always makes me think of one of my favorite sections from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where they're about to ask Deep Thought the question of the ultimate question of life,
go on.
Life, the universe, and everything, and a bunch of guys come running in. Wait! If you ask that computer that question, you're going to have a full-fledged philosopher's strike on your hands.
Exactly.
To which the computer says, now who's that going to inconvenience?
It's so true. I love that part. I mean, it just every time. I mean, I've read it like 5 times, and each time I just bust out laughing because it's so sad and true. Like, yep, what's going to happen? Like, oh no, the philosophers are going to strike. Like, yeah, it's an unfortunate thing because there was a time when that would have actually meant something to some people, and now it's just like, oh yeah, that's rough. But I think it's that place has been occupied by other people that just don't call themselves philosophers, but they're people who have organized thoughts upon what thinking is like. And I think that science coming in and neurological studies coming in and explaining so many of the things that philosophy used to consider its splashing ground has had its impact as well. So there are, you know, it's like back in the day when science was natural philosophy. They're still kind of tackling the same questions as philosophy. They're just not calling themselves natural philosophers anymore. But, you know, I think that's a fair space to say, yeah, they're kind of philosophers too, just with a much more organized method of inquiry. But, I love that section.
Yep, that's great fun. But, you know, that also helps because these guys, the show ahead of us is working on making it not quite so scary because they have fun with the questions and they do philosophy in front of an audience. So, but I'm going to leave you at that at the moment because we're coming up on our first break. So, and then we'll tackle your book when we come back. So, please stay with us through the break. You're listening to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Make the connection. I'm Lori Fitz, host of Connections Radio Show, talking about ideas that matter. Join me and my guests as we reflect on a wide range of topics that challenge us to see ourselves, our community, and the world around us in ways that get us thinking, connected, and perhaps inspired or challenged to do just a bit more because we made the connection. Be a part of our conversation, Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
We humans arrive on our planet knowing nothing. In our first 2 years, we learn how to clothe and feed ourselves, as well as the basics of communication. Humanists know that knowledge of our world is derived by observation, experimentation, and rational analysis. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find our meetup group, meeting topics, book clubs, newsletters, and other activities at our website, humanistsofmn.org. Like us on Facebook or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe, and I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and Francine Dinah. If you've never been to Cucumbers, it's a buffet-style restaurant with a huge variety of salads, homemade soups, bakery items, and hot entrees that change daily and nightly. Plus, our always fresh fruit and delicious ice cream. We're open for lunch and dinner, but Sunday brunch is my favorite time at Cucumbers. With scrambled eggs, waffles, French toast, bacon, sausage, baked ham, chicken fajitas, brunch potatoes, warm gooey cinnamon rolls, and many other items to choose from, it's no wonder why Cucumbers has always been a popular Sunday destination. So whether you're looking to skip Mass, someplace to go after Mass, or just great food to maintain your Mass, Cucumbers is the answer to your prayers. Bring in your church bulletin or Minnesota Atheist newsletter and receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
There are those that say that the recent severe storms are God's judgment. There are those that say humans are causing climate change. Humanists know that knowledge of our world comes from observation, experimentation, and rational analysis, not from reading horoscopes or old writings. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find meeting times and locations, and more at humanistsofmn.org. Like us at Facebook, too, or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours. And ours alone.
Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Scott Lohman. If you have a comment or a question, please call us at 952-946-6205 or send an email to radio at mnatheist.org. Dale DeBoxy, welcome back to Atheist Talk. So, what got you wanting to do a cartoon history of humanism? Because most people don't know enough about humanism to read regular tomes, much less one that might have cartoons in it.
That's the thing, and that's precisely why, is that, you know, to convince somebody, you know, here's a book with Paolo Sarpi and Arnold of Brescia and, like, all these other kind of, you know, important, like, key important figures in history that were buried under so much, that were so dangerous to the church that they were kind of buried and intensely forgotten. You know, to get people to really read that, like, here's a series of essays. No, people don't have time to labor through a series of essays so much anymore. But if you have, like, a little bit of candy in there, too, like, well, here's a cartoon, here's a comic that hits some of the, you know, more absurd points of their life and some of the more important points of their thought, and then that kind of, like, okay, we're loosened up, we're not feeling so intimidated, and now we can read the essay on it. I think having that just extra little visual component, and also just to kind of fight against the notion that, you know, we are all just these dour, you know, black-hatted, frowning, you know, figures that just are going around taking God from people and laughing at them. Like, no, we're just, we are people that enjoy, you know, a fun romp through intellectual thought, and we like challenges, and we like to, you know, going through the ins and outs of thought, in a sort of brisk, fun way, and to present that face as well to humanism, that modern humanism is a very fun and light and opening thing. And I thought cartoons would be a great way to do that and present that face. And then there's the philosophy, too. But
yep. And you do have fun. I love your basically your episode titles, because you're having a lot of fun there, and I like that. I like a title that's got both a snarky sense of humor and sneaking philosophy in as much as you can into five or six words.
Yeah, exactly. Just giving that little taste in there. Yeah.
You know, like you've got Lucretius, the MacGyver of natural philosophy.
Date me a little bit, but yeah.
Well, there's a new version coming out, so maybe the young kids will get that one a little better.
No way, is there?
Yes, there is.
Excellent.
Yeah, so that's coming up new this season, I think, on ABC, but you'll have to check your television listings for that. So,
man, I'm on.
Yeah, and I also like the fact that you did your best to balance it gender-wise, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the challenge. It gets to be less and less of a challenge as you move through, but in the Middle Ages, well, it's interesting because, you know, there was that grand era, that little space of time in France where you had female philosophers and statesmen able to really voice themselves and were welcomed in centers of learning and were welcomed as equals, as commentators on especially classical philosophy. And that got shut down eventually for about 500 years. But you do have these little sweet spots in history and these little places where women had a very powerful and a very challenging voice. My favorite is Eloise of Abelard and Eloise fame. I mean, she just had such a challenging view of how classical philosophy interfaced with religion, interfaced with the rights of women to their own reproductive destiny, that was amazing for somebody living 1,000 years ago, and that was shut down and silenced for centuries and centuries and centuries, not to surface again until, you know, the last 100 years or so. So to connect with those figures who sort of were starting to see their way before everything got shut down by the church, and give those people a voice again was the most exciting thing.
And that is really cool because, you know, especially you noted in most of the chapters on the women is that it's very sketchy. You've got like their year birth has got a question mark next to it.
Yep.
On a number of them, especially with Heloise and then the ones from 17th century, even England. And I love the title of this chapter, Novelist, Journalist, Spy, Wit, and Sexual Liberation in 17th Century England.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that little trio of people there, they are incredible. And anybody that if you get a chance to read Aphra Behn's plays, they are still funny. Usually comedy ages really badly. Like, you know, if you try and read comedic pieces from other centuries, it's usually sort of, you know, a hard road to trod, but like her plays are funny and they feature women making sort of sexual choices for themselves based on what they think is wise for their life and what will bring them both pleasure and connection with other people, and really sort of creating their own destinies in a way which is frank and shocking. And then you get after her, you get women journalists commenting on the state of British politics and being taken just as seriously as their male journalist component comrades, and then at the same time writing these massive works of just, you know, incredible satire, almost overbearing satire, but incredible satire where they mix, you know, just keen observation of the political situation with just total, you know, filthy jokes. And it's delightful in its way. And, you know, that is another thing that lasted. And it was this little point of radiance that kind of got shut back down as, you know, Romanticism kind of clamped its gender expectations back down on this group. But just to see that they existed here and there, and that, you know, 14th century France had these women who were doing it, and 17th century Britain had it, and just to have those little tastes everywhere is lovely and absolutely fun to be able to share with people.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So we're coming up on our second break. So tell people where they can find the book and where they can find you online.
Okay, well, The Cartoon History of Humanism is available on Amazon and also from thehumanistpress.com. And if you check in every third week at The Humanist Magazine online, there is a new episode up. We just did Franz Kafka, and it's fun. So check us out every third Thursday.
Yeah, I like that one. I read the one in Kafka because I've always considered him really hard to tackle. And
yeah.
your essay gives me a little more like, oh, he's not quite that scary, I guess.
No. He's impossible to figure out on some level, and that's why we keep reading him. So
yeah. Got to make that fascinating. So got about, you know, just 30 seconds, but I'll just mention, we'll talk about more when we come back. But I also like your title of Anthony Collins and the Bad Boys of English Deism.
Oh, yeah.
That's just
those guys, I can talk about them all day.
Okay.
That was enough. That was the start of the whole thing. That's our birth fathers right there.
Okay. Well, we've got fun to tackle when we get back from the break. So please stay with us through the break. You're listening to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTAF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Listen to A Woman's Place every weekend on AM 950 to hear about progressive issues from a woman's perspective. Coming up this week, Michelle Ness from PRISM, People Responding in Social Ministry, will chat with us about suburban poverty, food insecurity, and what we can do to help. Listen every week to A Woman's Place, where all issues are women's issues, Saturdays at 11 a.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. Podcast anytime at am950radio.com. Make the connection. I'm Lori Fitz, host of Connections Radio Show, talking about ideas that matter. Join me and my guests as we reflect on a wide range of topics that challenge us to see ourselves, our community, and the world around us in ways that get us thinking, connected, and perhaps inspired or challenged to do just a bit more because we made the connection. Be a part of our conversation. Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
We humans arrive on our planet knowing nothing. In our first 2 years, we learn how to clothe and feed ourselves, as well as the basics of communication. Humanists know that knowledge of our world is derived by observation, experimentation, and rational analysis. The Humanists of Minnesota are a group of humanists, agnostics, atheists, freethinkers, and others interested in finding rational and science-based solutions to our problems. Find our meetup group, meeting topics, book clubs, newsletters, and other activities at our website, humanistsofmn.org. Like us on Facebook or call us at 651-335-3800. The responsibility for our world is ours and ours alone.
Atheists, secular humanists, and free thinkers, here you are listening to the Minnesota Atheists Talk Radio Show, Atheist Talk. We hope you are enjoying it. If having a frankly atheist perspective on the radio waves appeals to you, please consider making a contribution to our radio fund. Our contract came up for renewal, and we need your help if you want the program to stay on the air. That will make sure that you can continue to have opportunities to hear interesting speakers with non-religious perspectives, and you can call up and ask them questions too. Get the details on our website at minnesotaatheists.org, where you will find buttons to make it easy to make a secure donation through PayPal. Or, if you have a business and would like to reach an intelligent, progressive audience, please contact us through our website. That's minnesotaatheists.org. Or call us at 612-588-7031. If you are interested in us, we are interested in you.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for sunny skies today with a high near 79. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 60. Monday, mostly sunny with a high around 76. And Tuesday, sunny with a high near 75. Cafe Latte is the Eat Local Minnesota restaurant of the week. They have a bakery specializing in fresh breads and desserts, including their renowned chocolate turtle cake. Plus, they have a large variety of box lunch items ranging from sandwiches to truffle plates. Cafe Latte is on Victoria and Grand in St. Paul. Details at eatlocalminnesota.com.
Most histories of philosophy and humanists tend to be a little dry. The Cartoon History of Humanism is not that kind of tome. Dale DeBoxy has a book that looks at key people and ideas and makes them a little bit more fun. Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. If you have a question or a comment, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email to radio at mnatheists.org. I'm Scott Lohman. Many of you know about this show by listening to us live on the air, streaming live on your computer, or picking us up on the podcast. Please make a donation online at minnesotaatheist.org or contact us at info@minnesotaatheist.org. Any amount you can donate, no matter how large or small, helps. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, Farmers Insurance Agent George Soy, and Cucumbers Restaurant. If you'd like to advertise on this program, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. This radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of listeners. If you're able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our radio fund page. This afternoon, please join Minnesota Atheists for a celebration of their 25th anniversary on that. And you can find more information on place and time on the website. You can also find out more information on Humanists of Minnesota at thehumanistsofmn.org. Our music is composed by member Brent Michael Davids. Check the schedule for book clubs, discussion groups, pub crawls, movie nights, and other gatherings throughout the year, as well as sign up for meetups, listen to podcasts or previous programs, subscribe to Atheist Weekly email, and become a member, all at mnatheist.org. And now back to our final segment with Dale DeBoxy. So you've got just a bunch of people all over history going back as far as you can, is there a favorite time period that you liked, or is there a specific person besides, you know, the bad boys of English deism that are some of your favorite characters?
Well, I think that it is that era, the 17th century in England, but also the sort of Dutch Golden Age is my favorite kind of time period. For the Dutch, at least, you know, it was this, they've just shaken off the Spanish monarchy, they've had their rebellion, they've come out successful, and now they're resolved to do everything the opposite of the way that their former oppressors did it. So instead of, you know, a single religious state, we're going to have, you know, wild religious speculation and philosophical speculation. We're going to have women as scientists and philosophers and artists, and allow them give a environment where they can thrive. We're going to have new ideas about public education. We're going to have new ideas about marriage as an institution, which is no longer just sort of a property relationship. And it was such a wild time, and it allowed for so many radical thinkers to make their way over there and publish and be safe in their publications, not only Spinoza, but all the circle that he was with, Korbach and all those other guys. That's a fascinating time. It's very, it's neat because it's all given the sanction of the state, and it's clear and in the light. The English deists are cool because they are like the rebels. They are just these weird, it's candle makers and ex-priests, and they're all hanging out in their like little secret clubs trying to finally get together and discuss these ideas, and realizing in each other's company. And they didn't even necessarily get to meet so much. It wasn't like Baron Dolbach later where atheists got together. They were just these individual little points out there writing these books, which are, you know, these little secret chapbooks on atheism. And that is just such a fun time because they are so in the shadows and just, you know, trying to avoid getting squashed while they're having these just radical ideas about what it means that China has existed for a very long time, has a superior civilization, and has never been remotely Christian. What does it mean that so many English priests are working so hard to try and make all Jesus's all the prophecies allegorically true, and they go to such weird linguistic improbable lengths to do that? What does that say about using scripture as a mechanism for communicating ideas? So those two eras, one where you get these guys working in the shadows, and the other one where the state is finally realizing that religious toleration is a good thing, even unto the atheists, those are my favorites. They will never not be fun to talk about.
Yeah, it sounds like it, because that again, you know, you mentioned is a very fascinating era. It's when, you know, after the printing press came out, where it's all of a sudden, ooh, lots of more people can put their stuff out in print and get it to people. You know, that was the internet of its time.
Yeah, exactly. And to have, you know, one place where you can go to where your stuff can get published. And if you just reading the accounts of the publishing houses in the Netherlands in that time is just this heady world where all these texts are coming in from all over Europe, all these forbidden texts, and they're getting printed, and these guys are seeing them for the first time coming from France and Germany and England and all these spots, and it's just one group of people who have the benefit of all of Europe's most subversive thoughts, and then they get to talk about them and develop them. And it's no surprise that you get this, you know, little cadre of thinkers that push the boundaries even further to the point where God really isn't in the picture anymore. He's not useful as a hypothesis in their situation anymore in any kind of meaningful sense. And that's all if you are the only person that allows real lack of censorship in that way, you're going to have the most interesting ideas happening.
So this you have this noted that this is volume one. Are you currently working on a volume two?
Yeah, this one kind of stops off at the end of the Enlightenment, and the episodes online, so that we went through and did the sort of dismal parts of 19th century, where, you know, you have that that reaction against the Enlightenment, and you have that romantic reaction, which tamps down a lot of the best impulses of that era. So we kind of worked our way through there and hit up some of those highlights. And now, yeah, I'm planning to end it more or less in the present day. I want the last episode to sort of be the heroes of today, who are pushing to make humanism again something which is available to everybody, and not just to, you know, a select group of philosophy nerds and social theory nerds and theology nerds. Like, that's something which is actually a broad-based movement. So volume two is, yeah, Romanticism, 20th century, and then it should end in the modern day. And then I'll have to reluctantly close out the series, which I'm sadly anticipating, but I suppose has to happen.
Yeah, well, there's new adventures you can take on after that point. So
yeah.
I do like we're just coming up with about 5 minutes left, and so we'll give you a chance to plug your websites and that. But I like the bonus part is it's beginning to low-key a lot like Christmas.
Yeah, that was the Christmas special one year. I sort of gave the choice of, like, well, it's the holiday time, so I want to do a figure who's important from the realm of, world myths and world to humanists from the point of world myths. So I said, you can either have Loki, you can have Satan, or you can have Prometheus. Pick which one. They're like, let's do Loki. And he is just, you know, as also a comic book nerd myself, it was lovely to be able to do Loki. But
oh, yeah.
From the point of view of Norse mythology, of Loki as, you know, those religions, those polytheistic religions that have one figure that really stand for the people, and the sort of spirit of unrest and skepticism and this sort of chortling at the gods and tricking the gods and all that kind of stuff. Like, he was the hearth god. Whenever the fire crackled in a fireplace, people were saying, like, oh, Loki's up there again, up to his old tricks. Like, he was somebody you could feel directly connected to. And then, you know, when Wagner latches onto him later as the kind of character who stands outside in the ring cycle and comments on the gods and all of their vanity, and all of their just, you know, selfish need for self-glorification, and Loki is kind of the guy who's on the side just, you know, heaving mockery upon them. And then even modern Loki, you know, Stan Lee Loki with his own sort of complicated relationship with divinity. I thought it would be good fun to tell some of those stories, some of the weird stories, like, you know, when he wrestles, ties his genitals up, ties them to a goat, and then has this tug of war with the goat for the delight of the gods. Like, just weird stories.
Yes,
you
definitely.
Don't hear quite so often, but that show that even in the depths of those old religions, there was this tension and this pull to comment and, you know, criticize some of the structures of the divinity around them that you really lost when you moved to monotheistic systems, which is why, monotheistic systems are so kind of crushing in their uniformity and their demands for black and white. Just to say, humans weren't always like this. There are other paths. There can be other things. Again, it's, we don't have to think that monotheism was what it always was, and that this is the only way to approach society. People did it quite well before Christianity took over. And it's just fun talking about Loki, so what can you do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but he's a fun character, especially since, you know, as you mentioned in there, that monotheism tends to be very staid and serious, and then it moves on to the oppressive and the repressive and all that kind of stuff.
So, yeah. No, having that little breath, and, you know, just I think it makes it easier for people, like, if you believe in monotheism, just to see that, you know, this wasn't the necessary structure, that all the kind of absurdities that you see, those are actually absurdities in other religions poked fun at their own absurdities. Why isn't your religion poking fun at its own absurdities? Isn't there something a little bit weird about that? Isn't there something a little bit suspicious about that, that the Greeks were able to laugh at and with their gods, that the Norse were able to laugh at and with their gods, but yours, it's strictly forbidden. Isn't that a bit strange? Why might that be?
And I'm going to have to cut you off there so we can let you get in. Where can people find you online again? Where can they find the book?
Yes. So all of my stuff, you can find at CountDolby.com, and there are links to the Women in Science there. That's every other Wednesday at Mad Art Lab, which is, again, comics and essays about different women in science, historical and current, every other week. Every third Thursday, go over to the Humanist magazine online, and you can find a new episode of the Cartoon History of Humanism in the book. Volume 1 is going to be at Amazon and the Humanist Press. Or if you're coming out to Skepticon in a couple months, you can find me there and get one from my very own hands.
Excellent.
And Frederick the Great, if you want to read some history webcomic with, a humorous slant on it, you can check it out at ftg-comic.com. We're about to celebrate our 10th year, so
Excellent.
You can come along and have some fun there as well.
Okay.
So there's always something.
Thanks, Dale. It's been great talking to you this morning.
It's been fun. Thank you very much.
And I'd like to thank you for tuning into Atheist Talk. I'm Scott Lohman. This show depends on your generous support from our members, our sponsors, and donors. Join us again next Sunday. Please consider supporting the show through the donation link at mnatheist.org. The podcast for the show will be on the radio page later today. This has been Atheist Talk on AM 950, KTNF, the Progressive.